Hey everybody, Thought Crime. I'm Blake Neff, and in this slightly spicier than normal conversation, Charlie, Jack Posobiec, and Andrew Colvett, as well as me, will talk about the Jeffrey Epstein document release. We'll also talk about Claudine Gay getting fired by Harvard as Harvard tries to straighten out its DEI regime. And then we'll have a nice conversation about the so-called Greer Pledge. Should you watch Marvel movies, listen to rap music, get a tattoo, or should all of those things be total no-goes? And then we talk about what our own pledge would be to improve our lives. It's a very fun conversation, and we hit a lot of very spicy topics. Buckle up, and here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Noble Gold Investments is the official gold sponsor of The Charlie Kirk Show, a company that specializes in gold IRAs and physical delivery of precious metals. Learn how you could protect your wealth with Noble Gold Investments at NobleGoldInvestments.com. That is NobleGoldInvestments.com. It's where I buy all of my gold. Go to NobleGoldInvestments.com. Okay, everybody. Hope you are doing well. Happy Thought Crime Thursday. Back by popular demand is Blake. You obviously got a lot of sun in South Dakota.
Oh, minimal amounts of it.
Did you see the sun in South Dakota?
It's pretty sunny. We used to be called the Sunshine State, and then Florida kind of stole the name for us. So.
Producer Andrew is here from an undisclosed location.
Hello.
In paradise.
Happy to be joining today. I'm the fill-in, and I love it.
And Jack Posobiec. Jack, how we doing? Happy New Year.
Charlie, Happy New Year, man. It's been a minute. I feel like I've seen you because I've been watching so many episodes of the Charlie Kirk Show. But really, Blake is the one I have to give the shout out to, because Blake, I don't know if you saw our Chronicles of the Revolution series just went pretty viral, took the internet by storm, and it was the Franco episode that really, really got people mad.
The people need to learn the truth. They need to learn. They've been fed all this diet of weird crap from Ernest Hemingway. And I'm always on board.
Ernest Hemingway was full of crap.
I'm always on board with taking Hemingway down a peg. I read A Farewell to Arms, and it sucked. So we have to get revenge any way we can.
He wasted my time. Meanwhile, Orwell comes out actually pretty good.
Yeah, Orwell comes out great. I strongly recommend reading him. I listened to Animal Farm on an audiobook while driving the other day. So it's a nice fast read. You can get through it in like an hour and a half.
How long is it on an audiobook? Yeah, hour and a half. Yeah.
If you're on high speed, yeah, you get done with it in under 2 hours. You learn how Napoleon.
So what you need to do.
So
what you need to do is you have to take the Russian Revolution episode we did and then listen to Animal Farm, and now you've got the whole thing combined.
Yeah, I will say, having, you know, I last read it when I was in fourth grade or something, and so now I pick up on all of the, you know, the deeper allegories, you know, here's World War II,
so
except on an English farm.
You hadn't read
farm.
It as an adult?
No, I had not.
Oh, yeah, that. Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay, gotcha. Yeah, see, now Blake gets it. Now Blake actually understands the theme of the show that we host every week.
Precisely.
All right, so the big news is the Epstein story. Jack, we did, as you well know, a full hour. It's gone viral, covered by a lot of people, on really the intel agent aspect of this. Blake, you and I talked about it. There's tons of wrinkles here, right? The wrinkle is, who was Jeffrey Epstein really? Was he a creation of the CIA Mossad, which I believe he obviously was, because there's really no track record of his financial brilliance or what the investments he made to justify this ridiculously opulent lifestyle that he enjoyed of mansions in Paris and mansions in New York and mansions in Palm Beach and an island in the Caribbean and a huge ranch in New Mexico and a couple Gulf Streams. How'd you make this money, man? You were kind of a weird, creepy math teacher at Dalton School and then went to Bear Stearns. You somehow found all this money. But Jack, let's just talk about the details. This is coming back into the news cycle. I don't think it's going away, because there might be more documents coming out over the years. What have we learned?
There's actually more tonight.
Okay, well then walk us through it. What are these documents? Why are we just learning? It's kind of a surprise. Give us the background here, and then what actually was in the documents that is noteworthy.
Okay, sure. So the documents, and this is something that a lot of people get wrapped around the axle on when it comes to sort of the Epstein case, the Epstein network, is they say, why, you know, what's the deal with these documents? Why do we have these now? Why didn't we have these before? Wait, I thought we had some before. So different elements of Epstein's operations have been made public over the years through various lawsuits, cases, and then, of course, actually the, I guess we could say the aborted prosecution of Jeffrey Epstein, which ended with him dead in his jail cell. He's obviously not going to continue the prosecution after that, but it all goes back to 2017 and our friend Mike Cernovich filing a lawsuit, a Freedom of the Press lawsuit against or in the Epstein case, basically getting against a seal that had been done when one of the accusers had come out against Epstein. And at the time, nobody wanted to talk about this thing. And people were running around saying, oh, you guys are a bunch of conspiracy theorists for saying there's elite pedophile rings involving DC politicians, including the Clintons, and kind of blew up on the internet. It's a long story. People have heard it. And it all kind of centers around Epstein. And so Cernovich goes in and files the suit and retains Mark Randazza, who's the First Amendment lawyer, to get in on this. And then nothing happens for about 2 years. But then Alex Acosta goes up to be Trump's labor secretary, who had been part of the Department of Justice team, which I believe off the top of my head, Southern District of Florida, who was involved in getting Epstein this sweetheart deal. So let me wrap this up very quickly. That's the lawsuit that's now coming to fruition 5 years later. And the people named in this thing have been fighting to keep it sealed. It's finally been ruled. That's how long this stuff normally takes, by the way, in federal court. So for those of you who are tracking the Trump cases on the federal docket right now, nothing usually moves like this. The Epstein case, these files, yeah, something that you filed almost a decade ago takes that long to get out. Now this is coming out. So we had a huge 1,000 document release yesterday. We've got another one, another couple of hundred pages. Libby Emmons over at the Post-Millennial, I know, is working on this right now. And the key thing in here is you've got testimony, you've got depositions, you've got names, you've got dates. Some of it we knew before. I think the long and short of it we knew before. Now there's a lot of details that we're going into. The big piece, though, that I think everyone had asked about is Donald Trump directly implicated? And in fact, his name does come up a few times. And every time his name comes up, they say, did you go to the house? No. Did he go to, or did he go to the island? No. Was he seen on the island? No. Did he participate in any activity with the girls? No. Did he get a massage from the girls? No. So every time Trump is named in, and you're looking at prosecutors, investigators in these depositions, the girls, and this is different, different instances, they all say that Trump was not involved in anything other than these just sort of what everybody knows, that they had, he knew him from sort of the Palm Beach social scene. He'd gone to Mar-a-Lago a few times. That's about it. And of course, as Alina Haba was on PBD earlier today, and as people want to know, that the minute that Trump found out about what Epstein was up to, he not only cut off contact, he actually banned him from Mar-a-Lago. So that's pretty much the long and short of it, as I would say, from a political standpoint, in terms of the actual 2024 race as involves Trump. Now, the fact that Bill Clinton is mentioned so many times, I think, really just goes to plumb the depths of what actually Bill Clinton was up to.
And now this is just a deposition. Is that right, Jack? In a civil suit. Am I understanding that right, Blake? Is that correct?
Pretty much, yeah.
It was just a back and forth deposition. There's so much more to the extent of who Epstein was, who financed him, who his clients were, what he was operating for. So Blake, kind of moderate any of the more extremes of this conversation.
And actually, Charlie, just to clarify, it's a deposition from one of the victims. So this isn't like a lieutenant. This isn't like a whistleblower. This isn't someone who was like high up in the organization. This was a victim. So someone who, yes, she was there, but it's not like it was someone in the intel community, we would say she had placement, but she didn't have high access.
So Blake, do you think it's fair to say that Epstein was probably an intel asset?
I think he had contact with intelligence. I think there's enough smoke there to suspect something. What I think is interesting is I think the sort of, if you want to say, the canonical conspiracy theory for Epstein is sort of the idea that Epstein was either with the CIA or Mossad. Those are the most common ones. Sometimes you'll get weirder
or
ones.
Saudi Arabia.
And then it was cultivated. And kind of the idea was to control the world or whatever, that he would get rich and powerful and influential people to go to his island. And then he would get blackmail material on them, such as having sex with underage girls. And it's on video or whatever. And then use this to sway world events. And that's sort of the canonical Epstein theory. And then he was going to reveal it all, so something happened to him, so and so. What I think is maybe a more plausible possibility and a sort of entertaining one is if you imagine Epstein as sort of the ultimate con artist. And this gets brought up with his relationship with Ghislaine Maxwell's father, Robert Maxwell.
The newspaper.
Robert Maxwell is this sort of sensational British press personality. He runs the Daily Mirror. After he dies, it's revealed that he'd stolen a huge amount of money, like I think hundreds of millions of pounds, from pension funds of the companies that he ran. And he dies in mysterious circumstances, maybe murder, maybe a heart attack. I mean, he was an old and unhealthy guy. Now, what's funny with Epstein is, you know, we talk about how where his money comes from is mysterious. And this is often brought up as, oh, well, he must have got the money from, you know, the intelligence agencies. But another funny thing is a lot of rich people essentially just claim that Epstein robbed them. So, for example, there's a Rolling Stone article about Epstein in 2021. Was Jeffrey Epstein a spy? I have it on my computer here if you guys want to bring it up. And it gets into one of his oldest relationships is with this guy, Stephen Hoffenberg, who goes to prison for running a Ponzi scheme. So he's kind of a financial criminal who works with Epstein. And what Epstein essentially does is he moves about $100 million of this guy's money offshore, and then he goes to the feds, gives information on Hoffenberg to them. And sort of the implication is he probably was able to steal $100 million of this guy's money, and this guy couldn't really deal with it because he was himself going to prison for all these crimes. And the article that Rolling Stone wrote suggests that if the guy had not lost his nerve and had insisted we're going to trial on all of this, it might have been worse for Epstein than for anyone else. All of this is a way of saying is, that's not the only guy, by the way. A Victoria's Secret billionaire claims
Les
that Epstein's...
Wexner.
Yeah, Les Wexner's claim he stole a bunch of money from him. So what if this guy is just kind of robbing a lot of people and then also, you know, likes his thing with, you know, teenage girls and is sort of cultivating this whole aura. And as part of this, yeah, he talks to intelligence agencies all the time. And it was useful to him for people to think he's this intelligence asset for everyone because it makes them scared of him more or less. And there are other people like this who exist. You know, a lot of people on the right are familiar with Chuck Johnson, who kind of just goes on Twitter about everyone being an asset for different intel agencies and how he's working for all these different intel agencies. And he's like a downgraded version of this, but, you know, a similar overall phenomenon.
Jack, what do you make of that?
Look, I do think that there's an element of puffery here, but at the same time, Charlie, you know, You've been talking about the universities more than anybody out there. You're very familiar with these operations. We're going to be talking about Harvard a lot, I think, in the next topic here because the Harvard president just resigned. Yet there's this huge tie between Epstein, Bill Gates, Harvard, massive organizations, and all of this, by the way, coming out after, okay, after Epstein's first after his first arrest, after it's already come out that he's been doing these things, he continues to have these connections, even continues meeting with Ehud Barak, who is the former, at this point, the former prime minister of Israel, a guy who shows up to Epstein's New York City. They call it a mansion. It's really a townhouse. So his walk up in New York City.
Oh, no, it's
shows
40,
up masked.
It's 40 rooms.
He's got like,
man, it's huge. It's,
yeah,
it's
no, it's but it's when you say mansion, you think of something different, I think, visually. And it's he's got the scarf over his face and glasses. I should have called for it earlier. And he's really just protecting who he is. We find that he's on the plane dozens of times, potentially more. And he's named in all this stuff. And the fact that he continues holding these types of high-level meetings, even though he's been completely publicly disgraced, continues giving money to Harvard, continues being involved in all of these high-level circles where I can only imagine, Charlie, in, you know, in we could talk about you know, I know we get behind the curtain here a little bit, but, you know, around here on this part of the political aisle, if you catch even a, if anyone catches like a whiff of that, you're out. You're just totally out. And it's not even talked about anymore. So the fact that he's still holding these meetings shows that there is some level of cachet that he has for some reason that nobody's ever quite been able to put their finger on. The same way that nobody's ever been able to quite put their finger on these missing tapes and videos and DVDs that were supposedly also in that New York townhouse that went missing when the FBI searched it.
So, look, there's a lot of angles being examined here. Here's one that I want to examine that I think is interesting, because Blake, I'm going to try to denormie you, and I think we're getting close.
Many
okay?
have tried.
No. Hold on. I think. I finally got a concession from Blake, where Blake threw his hands up, was like, I've been waiting for this. Okay. So I'm big on the blackmail thing, as you well know, meaning I think that people are getting blackmailed all the time. I think it's this nonstop blackmail operation. Okay. And you say, oh no, this is not true. You know, stop believing that people meet in private rooms and do this stuff. But you conceded a little bit when this Tim Burchett guy came out, right? Would you agree, Blake?
I always was complaining that everyone's like saying there's blackmail everywhere, but like, you know, there's hundreds of people. Someone should come out and say, oh, they're, you know, they're blackmailing us. And finally, Burchett did come out.
He did say it rather bluntly.
And he said
it wasn't,
bluntly.
It wasn't cryptic. It wasn't code. He's like, and then we're kind of sitting there, and I'll say, whether you're like a woman, you're like a man, they came up here and they just kind of get a naked picture with you.
And so that said, okay, that's cool. Who? Like, would it be nice if
Hold
you guys gave us
on.
A name? Sorry, Let's... like, I think you have a moral obligation if there's a big conspiracy that you know about, and it's not like they can just, you know, publicly whack him once he says it. So just come out and say.
We have it here. I'm trying to find, we have two different cuts. We played one on the show today that wasn't, it's from Benny Johnson's show. He did a great job. But let's play cut 38. I don't know if this is the best one. Let's play cut 38.
So you're saying that right now, currently ongoing in our Congress, there are members of Congress who have been compromised by either special interests or the intelligence community to not give the American public information on Jeffrey Epstein?
I believe so. 100%. 100%. I want to tell you one quick thing. I know this, it's a little different, but I've been involved in the UFO UAP issue. And it's, you know, like I said, I'm not going to bring out little green men and a flying saucer, but it's about transparency. I had an amendment on the FAA reauthorization bill that said if an American pilot sees a UAP, an anomaly or something, and they make a report to the FAA, that report has to be made available to Congress. I was told by the whip, I said, what happened to my amendment? And he said, it was killed by the intelligence community. And I said, you mean the intelligence committee? And he said, no, the intelligence community. It was not even brought up. And these are unelected bureaucrats that have that much control. And so, yeah, we got to start electing people with guts in both parties. This pandering stuff that's going on now, it's just a distraction.
Now there's a better tape, but Blake, is that persuasive that the intelligence community would actually interfere with legislation and or blackmail lawmakers?
They definitely do that. I love that euphemism, by the way. Intelligence community.
The CIA.
Like, go visit the intelligence community. They all live on, you know, just by South Mountain. And
well, they live in one. They live in a very wealthy community.
Yeah, yeah. So, but first of all, again, you can always think of the sort of normie versions of this. Like, okay, the intelligence community doesn't want you to make a report of every UFO sighting because it will turn out that some of them are, you know, the boring old, this is the black, you know, the blackbird doing its like secret flights and we can't publicize that. And so they would kill it for that reason. But again, it is nice.
When,
he came
when
out,
Blake worked with Tucker, he used to just like throw stuff past Tucker's window every once in a while to try to make him think that there were UAPs going.
That was always my job.
It was a frisbee.
Keep our cameras up if you guys can with the video in the middle. I don't know if you can technically do that. If you can, it'd be great. Can you do that? Thank you. Okay, play this. I want your reaction, Blake. This is as blunt as you're going to get. This is a member of Congress. Again, Madison Cawthorn was ridiculed for this. Hold on, we got Epstein,
yes.
We got Madison Cawthorn, we now got Burchett, who's a smooth-talking Southerner, Christian guy. He is as clear as it gets, who says people whisper in your ear to get you to vote a certain way. Okay, all right, let's play this. It's 88. Keep us around the edge, please.
Congressman, you represent the state of Tennessee. Marsha Blackburn has been completely blackballed in the Senate for asking for these flight logs to be released and for this client list to be released. It seems like now you are fighting with her in the House. Why the protection mechanism? And more importantly, you mentioned recently in an interview that there may be some members of Congress who are personally compromised by this and they don't want the truth to get out. Can you expound on that?
Yeah, 100%. You got powerful people and they write the big checks. Well, let's be honest, and powerful people in this country, they write the big checks and they, you know, they're the ones out on the tarmac when the president comes and visits, and whichever party they're in, they always either out on the tarmac or in the private room. They're the ones that write the big checks. They don't care who's in. They hate this country. They hate what we're about, but they love their portfolios and they love their money more than they do anything else. And they protect it and they protect the people that do that. And by doing so, you know, the old honeypot, the Russians do that. And I'm sure members of Congress have been caught up. Why in the world would good conservatives vote for crazy stuff like what we've been seeing out of Congress? It's how it works. You're visiting, you're out of the country or out of town, or you're in a motel or bar in D.C. and some whatever you're into, women or men or whatever, comes up and they're very attractive and they're laughing at your jokes and you're buying them a drink. Next thing you know, you're in the motel room with them naked. And next thing you know, you're about to make a key vote. And what happens? Some well-dressed person comes up and whispers in your ear, "Hey, man, there's tapes out on you. Were you in a motel room on whatever with whoever?" And then you're like, "Uh-oh." And said, "You really ought not be voting for this thing." I mean, you know, and what do? It's human nature. And, you know, no man or no woman actually is an island. And they know what to get at. You know, if it's women, drugs, booze, it'll find you in D.C. and in most elected offices. And that's what people of power and influence do. And it's just, you know, I've been in this game my whole life. I spent 16 years in the state legislature in Tennessee and 8 years as county mayor. And now I'm in my fifth year of Congress. But it's just the stakes are higher, but the game is still the same.
Jack, so did you find that persuasive?
Well, so notice the catch where he says, "I'm sure members of Congress have this happen."
But then, hold on, then he said suddenly, it gets very specific.
It does, but okay, so then you could turn this around. All right, so Bruchette, if you know specific examples, are there members of the Republican committee who are compromised this
Let's
way?
Let's get them on the show. Andrew, book them
up. I want to know it. Like, I feel like it's such crap where they come out and they're like, "Yeah, I know all this lurid stuff. They're compromised members of Congress." Do you know who they are?
So,
if you do.
So, Jack, you've been accused of being a foreign spy. Talk about brownstoning and all this stuff. What's going on here?
Okay, so this is one of the reasons that I brought up the type of house that Epstein had, because the term brownstoning and brownstoning operations, it actually goes back to these types of houses that were used predominantly throughout New York City. They're walk-ups. It's a sandstone facade, and it's because the NYPD and the FBI used to use them to set up sting operations in them, and the brownstone front is sort of like a fake business. But over the years, it came to be known as, you know, setting up the type of operation of entrapment and blackmail scheme in which individuals, often minors, are used to lure influential people into these compromising situations. The goal is to capture incriminating evidence. So you might get photographs, you might get videos. And then, of course, that can be used to target used against the targets as leverage to do their bidding. So obviously devastating consequences. This type of operation has been talked about for years. There are lots of stories written about that Ben Franklin was involved in this type of stuff when he was over in France, for example. They had things called the Hellfire Club, which were known as sort of gentlemen's sex clubs. And in fact, oh, by the way, you don't have to take my word for it. Jake Tapper wrote a whole book about it called The Hellfire Club, which is set in the 1950s in Washington, D.C. Now, of course, Jake Tapper says that it's all fictional and none of this would ever actually happen. This definitely isn't based on anything that Jake Tapper may have heard about and decided to want to reveal through a fictional novel. I mean, that would just be silly. Who would ever do such a thing?
But hold on. But we have real proof of this. Now, throw up image 87. This is a story from today, an exclusive from Daily Mail. High-end sex ring in Boston and D.C. areas was honeypot scheme by Russia, China, South Korea.
No, intelligence agencies would never. No, Andrew, come on.
And this is to ensnare U.S. officials, intelligence experts believe. I read this whole piece. These are
And I'll tell you, as the resident former member of the intelligence community, I can confirm that the intelligence agencies would never, ever use use sex trafficking or sex to compromise individuals to steal secrets. Never, ever bet your life on it.
This is why it's actually way more interesting than that, because this story broke, and Charlie will remember the day this broke because your tweet on it went like viral. It was, I think, November 8th or 9th. It was the same day that there was a vote in the House to approve $300 million of an additional spending for the FBI HQ, which is supposed to be bigger than the Pentagon, right? And this comes amid all the information, all the grassroots uproar about spying on the Catholic Church, about infiltration on J6, the Gretchen Whitmer kidnapping plot. It comes amid surveilling white domestic terrorists, domestic extremists, all of this reallocation of FBI resources off legitimate crime and to basically surveil MAGA, right? So we have all of this backstory, and then somehow, miraculously, this brothel gets raided, and then the next day there's a vote in the House, and 70 Republicans vote to expand the footprint of a new FBI HQ.
So, but then are we just going to say it? We're just like, okay, here's these 70 Republicans. They all had sex with hookers, and the FBI blackmailed them. But nobody does that. Nobody ever accuses a specific person. And if we were going to accuse anyone—
Democrat who's had sex with a foreign agent.
Who is the most—
I could start thinking of some.
Andrew, can you think of a
name? I can think of a lot, and I can think of one who it doesn't seem to change how he actually behaves in terms of
let me make sure I understand. Do you think there's no blackmail?
Blake, you're also saying that it changes how he behaves. That doesn't necessarily mean that's what they're after, right? This could be used as a source. They could be used as someone who's procuring things for them. This could be used for a variety of tasks. In fact, it could be used for nothing and simply wait as an insurance policy for when you need something.
What I would say is there's a million examples of our intelligence community being like an idiot clown show. I mean, these guys make ads about like wise Latinas that they've hired who like state their pronouns. And then as soon as we get into the realm of uncertainty, we kind of require this assumption that they're incredibly effective operators who never screw up. And I think that's what stands out the most to me about this. We know about the FBI's blackmail attempt on Martin Luther King Jr., you know, 50 years ago. That was real. Okay. And it was, one, we know about it. Two, it didn't work. Three, it was clownish and stupid. Like, they just send him this letter and they're like, hey, Martin, you should kill yourself or bad stuff will happen. And that's essentially what they tried to do. So we know about this and it didn't work. And so since then, I guess all of the blackmail works and never gets publicized in any way. And, you know, what stands out is
not, we're learning about Epstein.
When the early CIA, the CIA and the FBI would do all this like spy craft stuff, and they're usually sort of bad at it, and they get caught, and it's like embarrassing to them. And all the stuff that is recently alleged sort of requires that they be incredibly effective.
You only know about the operations they got caught on.
Well, hold on, Blake, you made a point earlier that you said a lot of this is maybe puffery. A lot of this is sort of like staging. I mean, I think the way Charlie, Jack, we've had conversations about this where people that are, you know, that we run into at different occasions or events, and we literally look at each other and we go, yeah, probably not, probably a spy. Like, be on your guard.
But they're always these characters.
But yes, what I'm saying is that the way the intel influence ops tend to work, under my understanding, it's very much on a need to know basis. People are not incentivized to expose these things. It's much
The guys at the DEI office aren't.
So you want some examples? Denny Hassert was Speaker of the House under George W. Bush. He was literally a pedophile.
Well, he was like having sex with like 16-year-old boys or whatever. Like,
is that a pedophile, Jack?
No.
Last time
not.
I checked the criminal
pretty
code.
Sure by definition.
Technically,
yes.
That's a pederast as opposed to a he or a he. Yeah, no, it's a pedo. You're a pedo.
I mean, if he's like 16-year-old boys, that's like legal in half the U.S.
OK, Okay. I say pedophile.
But whatever. Okay. So was Dennis Hastert black? No. Do we have any evidence?
Hold on. That's the question.
Definitely a gay pedo.
Time out. So was he blackmailed? Well, we know all this stuff eventually came out. It's not unreasonable to believe that somebody might have known about his behavior, his shenanigans, and he just kind of did what was necessary.
Well, that's the question, Blake.
But I could go through so many other examples, by the way. Aaron Schock from Illinois is another one, right? Not the pedophile thing, but being gay.
But here's the thing, Blake. How about it doesn't all have to be about sexual stuff, right? It might be a stock tip, right? And they have proof that this, you know, congressman or woman took a stock tip, acted on it. They have proof of it. And then they go, hey, we could get you for insider trading or whatever, right? So it might be a variety of different things. And we sort of have to question ourselves, why does the conservative party, the Republican Party, not vote conservative so often? Why are they constantly influenced to vote the other way? So it might not be that the threat is that they're going to completely take them out. It might just be like, hey, vote this way on this vote.
Well, I think a pretty straightforward answer is we elect people who don't believe these things that we claim they want to do.
We agree with that, but then it also creates raw material for the intel agencies.
Like, I guess what I would say is there a good example of a Republican who like consistently voiced their opinion against these certain things and then just totally flipped on the vote inexplicably? That would be stronger evidence of blackmail.
Sorry, go ahead, Andrew. Who?
Like, the truth is we just have dozens of Republicans.
Ken Buck, or there would also, it's what they do is they create, according to Burchett and other people, this massive sword of Damocles where it's like they know and you know they know, and over a period of time, you just kind of go with what is fashionable and you don't try to make too many waves. Let's say another example. Forget the intel agency thing, but just look at how, it is the intel agency. The facts are part of this, but look what they did to Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz, they went after him so hard because he was making waves, right?
Yeah. And they, one, they failed.
They barely failed.
And two, has Matt Gaetz ever come out and been like, I was confronted with blackmail threats? I think that would be a good example.
Well, first of all, he didn't bend the knee to the blackmail threats.
He could come out and say, hey, I was approached by someone who said, we're going to make your life really bad on this thing, that thing, that thing, unless you, you know.
It was probably more subtle, but I think Matt would agree.
He said he was extorted for money, though, right?
By the way, a guy went to jail.
Yeah, he was extorted.
So he got extorted in the private sector. That happens for sure.
A guy that was like a former prosecutor.
Has the ideology and, you know, the lifestyle that could combine to make him be a blackmail target, it's Matt Gaetz. And yet it seems that whatever they tried to do to Matt Gaetz didn't involve directly blackmailing him, as in, we will do this unless you change your behavior.
Or maybe he hasn't alleged it. Or maybe he was so disagreeable and just kept on saying he was insistent and that they went scorched earth. And they said the Department of Justice leaked that they had an active trafficking investigation into Gaetz.
I think
to try to put him in a box.
I think frustration here is this is a very long running conservative and just really political belief. It's, you know, when people, you know, like when an army loses a battle, they always claim that, you know, they were betrayed. That's why they lost the battle. This is what, you know, the Nazis were obsessed with. They lost World War I because they got betrayed by somebody. And when factions lose struggles, they like to look for traitors. They like to look for how someone undermined them.
And this is true.
It's very tempting.
Scapegoat.
Yeah, they like scapegoats, and they like the idea that, you know, they only lost because someone undermined them.
Isn't this the opposite of that?
And this is what it manifests as, is conservatives love looking for blackmail. They love looking for kind of secret conspiracies, you know, pedophile rings, all that stuff. And what I think can often be the case is more mundane. Like, okay, why do Republicans disappoint us? Well, we nominate and elect Republicans who are kind of pro all these things we dislike. We, you know, they're not as conservative as we are publicly. And so there's that. And as you say, you know, this can be explained by mundane things like, okay, the DOJ leaked stuff about Gaetz. That could be because it's fulfilling blackmail, or it could be DOJ is full of liberals who don't like Matt Gaetz and they want to damage him, just same way it was with Trump. You know, the stuff that's anti-Trump isn't because let me finish this, please. All the stuff that's anti-Trump isn't because they're all trying to blackmail Trump. It's because they hate Trump and they do stuff politically to hurt him for political reasons.
if Matt Gaetz would have come out and all of a sudden started to sound like Adam Kinzinger, do you think they would have proceeded?
Probably not.
Okay. That's the point.
But is that...
That's the point. The point is that if you vote and act a certain way, the dogs don't
that's
get
not,
unleashed.
That's
hold
not
on. That, you just
blackmail, though. That's just like mundane political corruption. That's Hunter Biden is not, you know, being spared because of blackmail. Hunter Biden is spared because he is the son of a liberal president, and so he's not a target.
But we are willing, Jack and I and Andrew are willing to go to the next
By step. The way, definitely someone who had blackmail
yeah,
on
there's
him,
tons
Hunter
of blackmail
Biden.
On him, and yet it doesn't seem to have... It seems that it just manifests as he gets protected.
So the... Outside of all, and I think it's not just sex crimes. I think Andrew is right. So let me ask you another question. Do you think Bernie Sanders' political decisions was influenced at all by his wife being under criminal investigation in Vermont?
Yes, I think so.
I doubt it.
Jack, do you think that Bernie Sanders' political decisions were influenced by his wife being under criminal federal investigation for the handling of that defunct university in Vermont?
I think Chuck Schumer once said that the intelligence agencies have six ways from Sunday to get back at you. And I think that Chuck Schumer knows a lot more about all of this stuff than any of us do. Chuck Schumer, who, by the way, very interestingly, someone that he may know or potentially someone related to him, I'm not sure, appears on page 39 of the Epstein flight logs. And I've been talking about this all week on Twitter and on my programs, that there is a guy by the name of Chuck Schum. So Chuck Schumer, almost the exact same name, but Chuck Schum without the R, who appears on page 39, flew on New Year's Day 1996 from Palm Beach Island to Teterboro, which is in New Jersey, but also services the New York City area. Very interestingly, right around where Chuck Schumer was. And Gwendolyn Beck also happened to be on the plane at that time. Gwendolyn Beck was the mistress of Bob Menendez. So just, you know, since we're talking about blackmail and brownstoning and all of these things, it's interesting that Chuck Schum and Gwendolyn Beck were on the same Epstein flight.
I want to push back, for example, on the Sanders thing. And it's very easy to build these elaborate stories when it's vague. But okay, so the specific thing is, Christina Nolan was the U.S. attorney for Vermont 2017 to 2021. She was a Republican who was appointed by Trump. So are we alleging that the Trump administration, which inherited this investigation from the Obama days, because it began with the Obamas, I believe, and they investigated this thing that they got from Democrats for several years and then decided we're going to drop it as part of a blackmail deal with Bernie Sanders, which means that the Trump administration is blackmailing far left Democrats.
I'm not even sure what I'm alleging. I'm bringing it up as a question. So you said, when did the investigation start?
Well, I believe it started around 2015 or 2016. That's when the college failed.
It proved my point. So the point is that under Obama,
they were prepping
they didn't want him to run third party and potentially run spoiler against Hillary Clinton because he had something super special and they wanted him to get in line. And one of the ways you do that, and I'm sure he was worried about something around this college, it was a warning shot, and it may have not have even been a warning shot, but if you find out your wife is under criminal investigation for the handling of a college, you know what that means.
Okay,
if you're
but
Bernie
then
Sanders.
He runs again in 2020, and this doesn't
Eric
revive.
Adams.
The investigation doesn't
Eric
come
Adams
back.
Another example. Eric
well,
Adams.
Yeah, exactly. Because Bernie behaved. And all of a sudden, Bernie behaved. Bernie had it stolen again in 2020.
He ran again in 2020, and it like was looking like he was going to win for a bit. Like they had a fire drill to make it go to Biden. Remember?
He never did the next thing where he complained about the process. He endorsed Biden. He got in line.
Boring explanation for this.
But
Bernie is a liberal who didn't want Trump to win, so he didn't want to run third party and sabotage it.
Or he's a revolutionary that got blackmailed.
Are you familiar with Occam's Razor?
I'm familiar with the concept, yes.
I just think Occam's Razor is Bernie is a liberal, and, you know, it's the same thing we would say with a Republican. If some Republican loses a race, other than, you know, probably Donald Trump would do it, but most Republicans, even if they lose in a shady manner, aren't going to hand a race to a Democrat.
Okay, hold on, Blake, let's play Cut 47. This is the Six Ways to Sunday clip. We played it earlier today, and I noticed something about it that I'd never noticed before. If you play it and you play wait till Schumer says, they have six ways Sunday of getting back at you, right? You can almost see in the clip that Schumer realizes he said something he shouldn't have said, and then he quickly falls in line and then says something positive about the intel agencies, right? it's almost like the guys who know not to piss him off. And that was the whole point of saying, like, Trump's really pissed him off. And actually, we really need him. And they're great. And, you know, and you could see Rachel Maddow gets very surprised. It's a very, very, very interesting clip. So when you talk about Occam's razor, all of a sudden I look at this clip and I go, you're probably right, right? It's like 70 Republicans vote for the FBI the day after the brothel gets raided. Okay, maybe not all 70 of them are compromised, maybe like 10, maybe 15. Isn't that, you know, actually the most logical, you know, option here when we know that politicians have been philanderers since time immemorial? I'm just saying. So play cut 47 and then watch the second half of this clip that most people don't watch.
This antagonism is taunting to the intelligence community.
You take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
What do you think the intelligence community would do if they were motivated?
I don't know, but from what I am told, they are very upset with how he has treated them and talked about them. And we need the intelligence community. We don't know what's going on. Look at the Russian hacking. Without the intelligence community, we wouldn't have discovered it.
Do you think he has an agenda to try to dismantle parts of the intelligence community? I mean, this form of taunting hostility.
Whether you're a super liberal Democrat or a very conservative Republican, you should be against dismantling the intelligence community.
Oh, see, he's like the little puppet there at the end because he knew he was out of line. He said too much. So, and remember, Schumer always used to say, I don't have a personal animus against Trump. I'm not like my colleagues. I've known Trump for years. I don't have a personal. It was almost like a bit of humanity that came out of Schumer in that moment where he's like, hey, you know, to my friend, you should knock it off because they're going to get you.
And yet at the same time, they kind of didn't.
Well,
I mean, they tried very hard. But the worst they have, like, they Access Hollywood tape. And
they
then
went after Flynn.
And then they conjured up the fake Russia thing.
It's because Trump was so different.
I just feel like if they're capable of all that other underhanded stuff, they probably could have also, like, faked evidence the Russia hoax was real. And they couldn't even manage that.
Well, what about all the color revolutions that have been run overseas? I mean,
the intelligence community loves to claim credit for things that very well might have happened anyway or probably did happen anyway. And then, you know, they kind of brush all of their other screw-ups under the rug, but we still hear about a ton of them.
So Blake's conspiracy theory is that the intel agencies are incompetent. It's okay.
Yeah, the biggest conspiracy theory is you know, again, everyone loves to take credit for things, and yet every supposed success of our intelligence community requires perfect secrecy that they perfectly covered up.
I'm sorry, but the honeypot thing is not that complicated. It's the oldest trick in the book. You lure people and, you know, men, maybe some women in with beautiful women. I mean, that's not complicated. And that's not that far of a stretch to believe that that would be the way that they operate.
This is
foreign actors in this particular instance. So it doesn't always have to be our CIA or our FBI. This could be Mossad. This could be the CCP or, you know, the KGB. We just don't know.
All right. I want to tell you guys about Noble Gold. Noble Gold Investments is seeing a huge surge of gold buyers, and it's pushing gold to $2,000. And it's all over the place. By the way, I hear a thing of silver from Noble Gold Investments. They do a great job. The people not afraid are those invested in gold with Noble Gold Investments. Gold is the most stable asset outside of any government control. From billionaires to multimillionaires to institutional investors, Noble Gold Investments is seeing a massive gold buying spree. Use promo code CHARLIE to bag a free 5-ounce America the Beautiful coin with each gold or silver IRA if you qualify. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. That is noblegoldinvestments.com. So check it out right now, noblegoldinvestments.com. The Fed has just raised interest rates by another quarter basis point. Go to noblegoldinvestments.com. Silver right here, noblegoldinvestments.com. Check it out right now. Okay, Claudine Gay is next.
This will be far less contentious, hopefully.
Well, hold on. We have a video of Claudine Gay, I think. Let's play cut 86. No, that's not the right one. I'm sorry. We have our numbers confused. Sorry, continue.
No, that's her. Yeah, that's her. And that's Bruce Rufo behind the desk.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I recognize his haircut.
Yeah.
No, that's Chris. Yeah.
So, Harvard's straightening out. Gay's gone down. Gay's out. Gay no more, I think was our broadcast title.
Wait, we prayed the gay away.
We prayed the gay away. Gay's gone.
Don't say gay.
And so
you're saying God hates gay? Is that what you're saying right now?
Wait, so is Harvard anti-gay?
It is at least they still have a lot of the gay. I think she's still going to get like $900K a year to
That's
work in their
so gay
African American studies department.
So they're just hiding.
So still maximum amounts of gay.
They're just hiding, this gay professor in the closet.
But so big picture, of course, she got taken out in a plagiarism scandal. The plagiarism is real. It was kind of lame. Like a big highlight of this is sort of that the plagiarism standard at Harvard is extremely strict. And so it's a lot of things like slightly rewording a thing and then also citing it, but like you didn't cite it enough or like you didn't put quotation marks around something. The real scandal, of course, and J.D. Vance pointed this out either today or yesterday. The real scandal is just that Claudine Gay was ever treated as a scholar in the first place. She writes 11 papers over the span of about 25 years. All just sort of, you know, race hustle crap. And she just relentlessly rises up the, you know, through the ranks at Harvard, despite this total lack of scholarly excellence, as it were, in a fake field. And she eventually is allowed to become president of Harvard University, which you don't have to be the best scholar in the world to be president of Harvard University. But this is generally an office that has been held by very distinguished academics. You know, as we mentioned yesterday, Larry Summers. You don't have to agree with Larry Summers on everything. He is an important American economist. He advises presidents. You know, Kagan wasn't head of Harvard, but was head of Harvard Law School. Like, was in a pretty distinguished position as head of Harvard Law School and eventually ends up on the Supreme Court. And then you just have Claudine Gay, and she's just this academic bureaucrat non-entity who just, like, rises up as, like a fungus.
Well, I mean...
and... It really, I think it's starting to hit
Blake
people.
Blake Neff compares Claudine Gay to fungus.
It's just hitting people.
Blake is working hard to win the audience back, folks. He's working hard.
Doing my best. Doing my best.
There's a whole riot going on right now. You have no. I'm trying to manage an insurrection in our.
You know,
Rumble
thing
chat.
Maybe
in the chats.
Reading the Rumble chat. We are, folks. We are reading the Rumble chat. We are live tonight.
By the way, we're the number one stream on Rumble right now. We're the number one stream on Rumble. Text with your friends. We're number one on Rumble right now. The whole Rumble website.
Are we serious?
Sorry, Blake.
Let me tweet that out.
Keep on a fungal, bacterial infection, cancer, tumor, virus, COVID. Is there any other biological?
We're not just talking about Ron DeSantis.
Easy, Jack. Easy. I got to rein him in. We still like Ron as a governor. Rein it in. Rein it in. So,
he's got a couple more years till
any, like rat infestation, anything else you'd like to compare her to?
I don't know. She's like, man.
The Black Plague?
That's getting spicy,
easy
Charlie.
Guys.
But you know,
easy guys.
But she was just
whoa. All I Harvard, said was DeSantis laugh.
He started with fungus.
Yeah, I didn't call her black mold.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, I didn't.
Wait,
either.
So the chat goes, we need Blake. Blake is okay.
yeah, someone else Blake. Called me a word that I'm not
Wait,
going
that's
to
just
repeat.
No, that's
but if
Blake.
You scroll
that's
up,
just Blake's account.
But anyway, so
yeah, like,
big picture,
quick.
I debated with my friends before Gay got de-gay, and I was debating with them, is it better for Gay to remain as president of Harvard or not? Like in a grand political scheme, because obviously Harvard has been super liberal well before her presidency. It's been super liberal even when it had really impressive people leading it. It's been a huge force of moving America to the left. Because, you know, it commands a huge amount of prestige. It's this huge producer of elites. It acculturates elites to this sort of liberal mindset, you know, the sort of Massachusetts standard of Boston Brahmins. And it's been doing that for ages. It will continue to do this. So would it have been good if Claudine Gay remained the head of the university? Because she would kind of discredit it. Like, we want Harvard to have a joke of a president because this would symbolically lower Harvard's standing.
Which would be good.
Yeah, that would be good. And I go back and forth on that because it is obviously also good for Harvard hired absolute joke of a president and she got fired in about a year because she was a joke. That's also good. But it's also possible that we just end up with a much more effective president of Harvard who is still going to be an arch liberal.
Yeah, I mean, I'm surprised they did not double and triple down and not give an inch to any of us.
Yeah.
I think this is amazing because it shows that we can effectuate change. These people can be moved towards something. Now, whether it's actual progress or not, we'll see. But but they're weaker than they have presented themselves.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of like, it's like Kamala Harris. Like, would we rather have Kamala Harris as vice president being this sick joke and they can't get rid of Biden because Kamala is disastrously unpopular? Or would we rather have, I don't know, for that matter, would we rather have Gavin Newsom, like a, you know, somehow a straight white guy who managed to claw his way up the Democratic Party, probably really smart and effective for that because he had to overcome all these affirmative action barriers against him? That guy would probably be a lot more dangerous as vice president. So we kind of like that Kamala Harris is there. So similarly, if we view Harvard as this hostile institution whose influence we want to go down, we want this fungus president who's just gumming it up, you know, derailing it, turning it into a joke.
Not if we don't notice, though. Not if we, not if everybody still is not if everybody's still applying the same amount of prestige. I think one of the best kind of messaging points here is that, like, hey, if you go to Harvard, like, you know, we have less esteem for you now than we did before. And that's something that Bill Ackman has been hitting on. He's the damage to the reputation of the university is something that grieves him, you know, as a former Harvard alum. But I also think that the real issue here that we're kind of like talking around is the fact that all of this came to a head after October 7th. October 7th is what, you know, essentially broke the back of DEI. And, you know, I have a couple of thoughts on this. The voices like Bill Ackman and what's the guy at Penn? I'm just blanking on his name.
Mark Rowan.
Mark Rowan, who really helped like lead the charge.
Yes, he did.
Because of the anti-Semitism. I think, you know, Blake, you were the one that shared this tweet. It was a Fisher King tweet, and I thought it was brilliant because what it was essentially. I don't know if we can find that, Blake. Maybe you know how to find it really quick. But the tweet was that they are forcing the white majority that is, you know, becoming less and less of a majority until we're going to become a plurality soon enough, especially with this border, to sort of adopt certain identitarian, I don't know, you know, like an identity as a group with a country. But we have not wanted to do that, but they are forcing the white community, the white population in America to do that. Which is a really interesting thing, because what we watched with after October 7th was we saw the Jewish community sort of organize and coalesce and start, you know, shouting from the rooftops that what was going on campus was wrong. It was wrong. But it also exposed the fact that white Americans have basically, and Christians have been the only groups not allowed to sort of say, hey, we're getting prejudiced against, we're getting discriminated against. How come we don't have a voice in this, especially as we become more and more, targeted, more and more victimized by this run amok DEI regime? And then we have this crazy stat that came out, and Charlie, you did a great job highlighting it, is that 6% in the year after BLM, only 6% of, was it S&P 100 jobs were given to white applicants. 94% of jobs were given to black applicants. And so now you've kind of got this, I think, interesting opportunity for October 7th, tragedy as it was, to sort of open the door to a larger conversation. And people like Bill Ackman are actually getting on board with it. And we're having this conversation with diversity in hiring, and you have some people on one side of it, like Mark Cuban, who's making a total ass of himself. Pardon the French for the podcast. But you've got Mark Cuban on one side, you got Bill Ackman, Elon Musk on the other. And it feels like for the first time after October 7th, again, tragedy, that we are winning the debate. And now we have X to thank for the fact that our voice gets to be elevated and not suppressed. We're winning the debate about this run amok DEI. And I do think, ironically enough, October 7th will be the end of DEI as we know it. Now, it's going to mutate and take other forms. But as we know it, I think the beginning of the end, I hope.
Yeah, and I hope that it doesn't metamorphosize into DEI with Jewish students protected, quote unquote, carved out, but anti-white.
That's like the fear is that that's this, where this could is get heading. An outcome.
And honestly, it's probably the most likely
like DEI
outcome.
Plus.
Yeah, like DEI plus is if you're getting like Hulu plus with an add-on. Right?
Yeah.
You get Hulu plus live TV. Well, you get DEI plus, you know, protections for Jewish kids, but total anti-white hatred still institutionalized.
Yeah.
Are we really going to cleanse the institutions of all of this anti-white nonsense? Like, really? No, of course not.
Yeah.
It's in the bones. It's in the fiber.
It's too foundational to, like, too much of what they believe. You still see this in everything they write. You know, you'll get these articles. There was just another one, you know, the other day where they'll be like, you know, they'll compare, like, black life expectancy is lower than white life expectancy. It's become because of white systemic racism, blah,
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 blah. Because of diet.
And guess what? Well, the funny thing about it is whites don't even have very good life expectancy in America. Hispanics have higher life expectancy than white people. Substantially, like 2 or 3 years, I think. And, you know, that's despite being poorer. That's despite whatever, you know, racism they encounter. That's despite, I think they might even have a higher obesity rate or something. Or it's, you know, it's at least comparable. And then, of course, Asians also have a higher life expectancy. And, you know, you still get these articles that just are like, hate whitey, 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 whitey. And that's all these universities. You have people whose entire career. The thing about Claudine Gay. The thing about Claudine Gay is that Claudine Gay's entire career is essentially built on, you know, get whitey. Like, her academic discipline is born out of left-wing critical race theory politics. Her papers, such as they are basically plagiarizing other people's work on critical race theory politics. And
well, so
to say that you're just going to disassemble that overnight is very unlikely, unless you have – you need, like, really revolutionary leadership. You need people to come and say, we're going to, like, burst this – you know, amputate this entire tumor all at once.
It won't happen. And I mean, while the Gay resignation, I guess, is good, still getting a $900,000 salary and still – teaching at Harvard, it's not going to reform the institution.
You'd need a revolution in morals.
About a couple of things here.
Go ahead, Jack.
I was going to say, so it's basically like you're saying that and I agree with Blake wholeheartedly on this, that, you know, I don't think it's something you can just do overnight, but there's a couple of different things. And Andrew, I think, brought it up as well. So you are dealing with whites now starting to view themselves more as a specific group. Mostly because they've been forced to by people in positions of power like Claudine Gay, constantly categorizing them as such in a way that whites, I don't think internally have ever done. It's only been externally through these new factors. But also since October 7th, and I know, Charlie, you took some heat from this because you mentioned, you dared mention Jewish donors when you were talking about the alumni who were very upset about what was going on, specifically in regards to anti-Semitism. And your point was that you now have sort of these two batches of, or maybe three batches of groups, conservatives, of course, most directly, being so upset and targeting these administrators and targeting this system. The real question is this going to be enough to actually break? And it's not just DEI, because it's all affirmative action. And Blake, you and I got into this in the Chronicle series in the fourth episode when we started talking about the 1960s. And that all of this, like, if you want to know where wokeness comes from, you really do have to go all the way back to the 1960s. So you can't just sit there and say, oh, well, this specific program is bad or this specific person is bad. It's like we have to really go out and examine the structures on which all of this was built if we want to go back to the original republic, this idea. And you and I got into it. We go into a lot about, you know, all men created equal. What does that mean? Equality of outcomes, et cetera. That, you know, and Charlie, I know in the conservative movement, we like to talk about that all the time. Equality before the law. But we've imported so many people in this country, millions and tens of millions of people into this country that have no idea what that distinction means. They hear equality. They look at the government and the relationship between the U.S. government and them as basically a social services compact, because that's what it's like in their home countries. And so they're like, all right, well, what do I get? What am I getting out of this? And if I'm not getting as much as that group or this group, then I'm going to demand it. And that's how they vote with their politics. And I know we're kind of getting into third topic territory. I do want to get there eventually. But I think this is not necessarily something that's all right. What they're trying to do is they're trying to get rid of DEI but keep affirmative action. And that's the problem. You have to actually go back to the heart of it.
Well, and by the way, I'm not saying that DEI is dead yet. What I'm saying is you've got the ideological foundation because October 7th exposed a massive fault line in the ideology, right? It exposed all the contradictions. Now, there's two approaches here that you could take. You could say, I'm pissed off that all the Jews got involved because of the anti-Semitism on campus. Where were you before when they were blatantly anti-white and you didn't say anything? I'm pissed. I don't want to talk to you. Some people have said that. I take a different approach, although I understand the animosity and the frustration there. But if people like Bill Ackman are going to wake up and include all groups, including white people, that they should not be discriminated against. And you know, if you read his long sort of screed on Twitter, he's actually saying like, hey, the most qualified person should be the next president of Harvard. And by the way, you should fire all of the board. So what I'm saying is it might take decades to fully root it out. But for the first time ever, you know, we can go on. And Charlie, you've made this point. It's like you can go on Twitter and say replacement theory is real. It's not a theory. It's a fact. And it's like, you know, it's a ripple. It's not even that big of a deal. It's not like the Overton window has now moved, and the people, the folks on the right that need to speak up are finally starting to do it, and there's less fear involved. And I would say ultimately that's why I think that the progress is moving in the right direction. It's not dead yet. It might take for a long time, but ultimately. You know, one thing I would love to get into, maybe not for another thought crime, is repeal the Civil Rights Act. I mean, we should reform that. Should reform the Civil Rights Act. It's way too far reaching.
Oh yeah, I mean, is that a thought crime anymore to say the Civil Rights Act was an awful
idea?
No,
I think over the last like 3 years, it's become. I mean, it's still
Blake,
probably.
Blake, give an abbreviated rundown of what you said the other day.
Well, I mean, it's just that. First of all, it's like it's almost like everyone got conned. Like what we wanted is in the 1950s, we have the remnants of, you know, I shouldn't say remnants. It's still pretty strong. Jim Crow in the South and in a few other places. And people were sold this bill of goods that, OK, we'll pass this law to abolish this like overt government caste system over society. And, you know, that's all it's going to be. It's just going to be, you know, get rid of the really bad caste system stuff. And then pretty much immediately we get, you know, modern DEI under a different name. We start getting quota systems. We start getting, you know, egregious racial favoritism.
Yes.
'Cause people basically, equality is kind of traumatic to people, if real equality, because actual equal opportunity, it lays bare some things. It lays bare that some people are more talented than others, that some people work harder than others. It lays bare that some people have better habits than others, and that this produces different outcomes for others. And it's very hard for people to accept this. It is a challenging thing. Having a liberal society in the small L sense is difficult for people. And so instead, you know, what people want is they actually kind of do want equality of outcome. A lot of people would prefer that. And so you start getting right away aggressive interventions. And so you start seeing all the stuff that is happening today is this payoff from it. You know, how did Claudine Gay rise through academia? Well, she's an African-American studies professor. Why does that department exist? Was there an African American Studies department at Harvard in 1820? No. No, there wasn't. It's something that was created in the 60s.
No, it should be totally abolished.
Because protesters took over buildings and like made threats. Yeah, make this bogus
like
department.
Academic terrorism.
And at the time.
And Blake, you're.
At the time.
I was going to say the.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
At the time, there's all these people who are saying, yeah, if you make this department, it's just going to be this bogus political thing and all the classes will be easy. By the way, African-American studies departments are famously brain-dead easy classes that you can like write in crayon on the paper and get an A. And, you know, we do this in part because we have affirmative action to get into universities. And so you have people who aren't smart enough to be in the school normally, so they fail other classes, so they need an easy department they can go to so that they can get good grades and then justify all these other things. Like, we've totally screwed up meritocracy at every level because of the DEI monstrosity. And it's so much deeper than people think. It is not even merely someone getting hired or promoted for the wrong reason. It's like it's rotted away at our entire idea of a merit-based system.
The line you had that I thought was so great when we were talking about Martin Luther King is you said that conservatives tend to mythologize MLK's I Have a Dream speech because they love the words that he says in the speech. But then you look at what happened with the movement next, and the very next thing the movement pushed for was affirmative action. So it was just like the Obama era, where you have these wonderful, poetic, flowery speeches that don't actually match up with anything that's going on the ground. Because here he is painting this wonderful picture of a colorblind society, but that's not actually what the movement was reaching for.
Yeah, or it's even or if it was believed. What they were reaching for, the reality is dramatic. Yeah. You know, it's like
End up with race communism.
Yeah, you end up with race communism. Or, you know, it could even be, you know, they'll say, like Frederick Douglass would say, you know, give us an equal chance and, you know, we'll succeed or fail. And then if you give them the equal chance and they kind of start failing in response to it, you kind of have two options. You can say, we have severe problems, either culturally or otherwise, and those problems might not even be easily fixable. They might be impossible to fix. Or you can believe, actually, there's, you know, hidden double secret racism. There's systemic racism that hasn't been taken out.
Yes.
And it is extremely, you know, there is a strong incentive mentally to believe the second option. It's understandable someone would want to believe the second option. And, you know, you can get away from race for it. You know, imagine in a religious basis, like let's say, you know, this branch of Christianity does substantially worse on all these different measures from another one. It's, you know, if you're in that community, it's really not pleasant to contemplate. Maybe even if I believe this religion, maybe it has some aspect of it that causes us to be held back culturally or otherwise. And it's just, it's not pleasant to believe these things. People don't like to believe unpleasant things. People will embrace delusions and fantasies. And the problem of DEI is we've essentially rebuilt our entire civilization around a fantasy. And eventually the bill does come due, but it's a big country. It can take decades and decades for it to happen, and now we're seeing it.
Well, it's starting to come due.
Like South Africa.
Yes, and it's starting to come due for a variety of reasons, because it is at odds with truth and justice. Truth and justice are the immune system of any civilization, and you suppress truth and justice, you get very, very sick. And wokeism or DEI cannot exist with truth and justice, period. Cannot. Especially truth, because justice, you could have truth is what leads to justice. Okay, I want to tell you about Prepare with Thought Crime. The unthinkable very well might be happening. No more surprises out in the open. Our so-called trusted institutions tell you not to worry, that everything is fine. But you know better. You won't be allowed for yourself to be blindsided again. Join the folks investing in emergency food storage. You can trust My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company. Pick up their best-selling 3-month emergency food kit. Their delicious meals offer 2,000 calories every day. Just add water, heat, and then eat. Go to preparewiththoughtcrime.com and save $200 off a 3-month emergency food kit from My Patriot Supply. That is preparewiththoughtcrime.com and prepare for what some people might think is the fallout and save $200 off a 3-month emergency food kit. That is preparewiththoughtcrime.com. That is preparewiththoughtcrime.com. All right, guys, we're a little low on time. We can go a little over time. How do you want to navigate and proceed? We have a whole menu of stuff.
Should we just do that poll quick? I mean, it kind of flows out.
Well, the pledge.
We
go to the pledge because we're never going to get to it.
I've wanted to talk about this for 4 months now, but
I think it's interesting. Say what it used to be and now what it is.
Okay, so
it was so impossible. One of them got removed. Right.
So for context,
we haven't even explained what the pledge is.
I'll do that. Okay. So we call it the pledge. That's big. So it's called the Greerhead Pledge. Scott Greer is a guy I used to work with at the Daily Caller. He's got a blog now. He's a guy on the right. Controversial figure,
never heard
disclaimer,
of him,
whatever. But
highly respected, I hear.
Yeah, highly respected. And so he has a thing he created called the Greerhead Pledge, because I guess his followers are Greerheads for whatever reason. And it's got four pieces of it. It's like, you know, four things you should do to rebel against modern American cultural rot. And the four things as they currently are, I will not smoke weed. I will not get a tattoo. I will not watch Marvel movies and crap.
Is it no alcohol?
No, it was weed, Marvel movies. Crap, I'm totally spacing on the.
But you just wrote it earlier. You wrote it.
I literally did, and then I forgot.
For a while, right?
There was. I will not watch the NFL.
No rap music.
No rap music. So
this is
will
easy.
Not Marvel listen tattoos, to rap music. Weed and don't rap. Smoke hard. Weed.
This is every
don't
day.
Watch a Marvel movie. Don't get a tattoo.
Hold on.
And it used to have
without even. Say it once without any crosstalk.
Please. All right. Without any crosstalk. Four parts of the current pledge. I will not listen to rap music. I will not get a tattoo. I will not watch Marvel movies. I will not smoke weed. And I know it's very easy for you. It's very easy for me as well. But
and me.
It's very hard for a lot of people. Like something like 45% of Americans have tattoos now. Rap music is extremely popular for some unfathomable reason.
Whoever wrote that must be 6'2 with an IQ around at least 187.
I know, probably measured scientifically.
Does he really have an IQ of 187? I find this very
no. Horrible.
Yes, he does.
Are you serious?
Mm-hmm.
That's yeah. Nice.
I can't tell if you're like mocking or not.
No way.
It might be 100.
Charlie, we have data on this.
It was literally tested probably 188 in the lab. Now.
Yeah, he says it on his Twitter account.
Why would he put it on his Twitter account if it was not true?
Charlie, it's on Twitter.
Like, would he lie about his height?
That's where the Epstein files are.
He said those were
So to explain it more, because again, one, this is bizarrely hard. People love their weed for some reason. People love their rap music for some reason. And kind of each one of them, as he explains it, is sort of pushing back on like a degenerate angle of American culture, a way American culture is going rotten. So tattoo. And so that's why certain things could definitely be there. Like there's no, I will not use porn, but sort of the no weed, it kind of is part of that. It's that you're pushing back on this. So weed is that there's this widespread acceptance of like bad addictive crap in American life, that people are, you know, doing all these drugs, doing all this stuff that's self-destructive, and we just wallow in it. And it's, you know, it's considered okay to talk about, you know, we have ads for it everywhere, and that's trashy. And he's sort of saying we should aspire to bring back kind of old 50s and before WASP culture. Even if we're not WASPs, that was a good culture that was good for America that we should aspire to. Rap music, it's about sort of like, you know, the underclass culture of America. So, you know, extolling, you know, all this, you know, trashy stuff rather than like good music. And it's not that, you know, we're going to ban rap music, but it probably is not the best thing to extol, especially when, you know, the lyrics are like vulgar and violent and just,
I have a question,
you know, very trashy. And just to finish it. And then the no Marvel movies thing is not that Marvel itself is specifically ultra evil. It's as he describes it, it's pushing against like the Reddit culture of America. So being obsessed with franchises and, you know, oh, the new Star Wars movie. Oh, my gosh. And like, being all
well,
into
so
that
was my question. Does Star Wars now count as a Marvel movie because Star Wars is technically under the same umbrella at Disney? Like the
I don't
same
think
people
it,
working on
it's
it.
It's not literally a Marvel movie, but spiritually refusing to watch Star Wars does adhere with what the pledge is going for, which we have all these
what
people
about
who
Game
care
Thrones?
So much about Star Wars. And you can now find threads on Reddit where people
I quit watching Game of Thrones in what? Season 5, episode 9.
Yeah,
so I've never seen past season 5, episode 9 of Game of Thrones.
But it's like these Star Wars movies.
And I ran like a Game of Thrones blog.
You can find Reddit threads where people are talking, how can I make sure that my kids grow up to be Star Wars fans? Like not like, oh, you know, I'm Catholic.
Dude,
how do I make sure my kids keep going to church? How do I make sure my kids like Empire Strikes Back?
I was in Pennsylvania recently. So I was visiting my family. I was up there. Dude, I saw so many millennials with Star Wars stuff all over their cars with children. It's like, as you say, raising their kids to be pro Star Wars the same way that like my parents raised us to be, I don't know, pro, you know, Catholic. Well, yeah, Eagles fans. And especially this week, oh my gosh, you know, you get the run back and then, you know, blow the Eagles have this great thing they do where when you apply a little bit of pressure, they completely fold. Say it's actually a coping mechanism, defense mechanism that's learned, evolved over the years. But yeah, being Eagles fans or being Catholic or Polish culture, et cetera. No, now all of that out the window, it's all Star Wars on like every car that I saw with kids in it. So by the way, we're actually taking in the Poso household, we are taking the Greer pledge or making our own version of this to the next level. So not only are we doing I already don't watch Marvel movies, but we are also raising our children Star Wars free.
Ooh,
so at
heroic.
This point, my kids,
including the
my
original
kids
Star
do
Wars,
not actually know all of it. I think you
now,
mean one, two, three.
Part of the debate. So the
and there's
pledge.
No Star Wars whatsoever. My kids have no idea what, like, if you go Darth Vader, Luke Skywalker, they're like, what is that? I have no idea what that is.
So
it's great.
The pledge used to not have the tattoo line, and it instead had, I will not watch the NFL. And he actually did a whole essay explaining why he took out, I will not watch the NFL. And I think it's kind of interesting what he's getting at, because arguably the NFL is like the biggest one of these things that like conservatives can't quit watching it. It's hyper addictive. We just love football. And then the NFL comes out and does these ads that are like, the NFL is gay. The NFL is trans. We're going to write in the end zone that like we love and BLM. Racist. And, you know, they'll just do all these like ritual humiliations of
us. So it wasn't about sport.
And I will meet conservatives who will brag about how the NFL is going woke and going broke. And they still watch the NFL, which hints at the deeper reality that it's not going broke. The NFL is more successful than ever. Its ratings are breaking records. It is ludicrously financially well off. They're forcing us to care about Taylor Swift dating Travis Kelce, even though I have no organic reason to care about that. It's almost like they're spiking the football. And, you know, if you want to imagine the future, to paraphrase Orwell, imagine a rainbow colored football being spiked into your face forever. And but he took it out. And what he argued is that the NFL, it's not a raw negative. He kind of says all the other four things are just bad. There's essentially no upside to them. But the NFL, he says, represents the current state of America in its glory and ugliness. It is the ultimate example of American culture. The Super Bowl is the most popular event in our country. It highlights all our cultural and social trends. Many of these trends disgust us, but they do represent the current state of the country. And we can still criticize the NFL, but it does have upside too. Like, football is a beautiful sport. It is a great sport. You can imagine an Warrior NFL that is 100% good, and we can imagine improving the NFL, whereas we can never make Marvel movies not cringe. Weed is always bad. Tattoos, unless you're like a sailor, are always bad. And that's even in the pledge. Like, you can get a tattoo if you're a sailor, basically.
I'm so glad I didn't get a tattoo. I'm so glad. I had that
as a guy who was in the Navy. I think I'm the only guy who's ever gone through 8 years in the Navy without getting a tattoo or having one sip of alcohol the entire time.
Apparently, wow, a majority of women under 40 have tattoos now.
Really?
And women are more likely to get tattoos than men now. I believe also that. It's very...
I totally believe
can
it.
Can we do an actual pledge that's hard? This stuff's not hard.
What would be the harder version? What's the Kirkhead pledge? Well, no alcohol?
Well, right? Cold
alcohol,
shower?
Nope.
Oh, no. It's
18 years strong.
It's only nose. Is that right?
So only it's nose. Only, it's nose.
No carbohydrates?
No carbohydrates. So first,
or how about like no sugar?
No sugar. Maybe no refined sugar, like no added
no
sugar.
No
how
sugar.
No high. It's not impossible.
It's darn near impossible.
Seed oils.
This is
no
our first show after New Year's, so
no
we're doing
high
resolutions,
fructose,
right?
No,
I would do sugar. I would
corn
do sugar.
Syrup.
Yeah, okay.
No corn syrup.
No corn syrup.
That's good.
No okay. Corn syrup.
No corn syrup.
No syrup. Alcohol.
No alcohol.
Can you get to four?
Well,
no,
I guess
the Kirkhead pledge.
No pornography.
The thought crime pledge.
Yeah, no porn. Okay.
No porn.
That is important.
Or how about no streaming apps? Like no
Aren't
Netflix.
We on a streaming?
No, like no Netflix, no Hulu, no no Amazon.
That would be good. I think I like that. I still pass.
And how about no social media?
Still in.
No I'm social media. I like that one.
I don't use any social media.
No social media. Well, you make me do social
I know,
media.
I don't do it.
No, that's a cop out though, because
you got your social media Shabbos going.
No, it's not, because I don't consume it, Jack. I have a whole speech on this. The consumption and production are two different things. Pushing out content.
Okay, but
and
the cop out is that
you're
still
realist.
Asking
you're
people to consume
that people
it in
are
your
watching
name.
I'm a drug
your
dealer, not a consumer of the
drug. He doesn't use the product.
All right, now he's honest, folks.
No, but it's true. You never get high on your supply. Hello?
Social media, I do think, is a big underrated
thing. That's how they
should
have ended Breaking Bad, by the way.
That's how I'd ruin parties in D.C. I'm just like, social media is just like porn. If you do a ton of social media, it's like...
Mine is harder than Greer's, though, right?
I think
hold
so.
Hold on. What did we just say? No refined sugar.
No fructose. No corn syrup.
Let's just say
no alcohol.
Syrup. I think that's a good one, right?
Okay. No corn syrup. No alcohol. No social media.
Wait. Producer Foz has a compromise. No social media on the weekends. So Charlie, this kind of builds off what you do on Saturdays.
He's cucking out on that one. It's got to be no.
What do you mean?
The Greer pledge is not like, other than the sailor thing for tattoos, it's not like no Marvel movies except when your kids are really, really excited to see it.
We wouldn't even know about it.
Yeah.
Hold on. All of Greer's
There's a structural issue here, because none of this stuff would exist without social media. Like, our entire field, our entire industry wouldn't exist without social media. So
that's
you can't just
true.
Say no social media.
I guess.
Just have
I feel like I could concede Twitter. Twitter I can kind of tolerate, although you have to recognize there's very bad ways of doing it. But like Facebook has gotten really
I never
bad.
Go on.
But Instagram and TikTok are like really the two one like that really destroy people's brains.
Yeah, and YouTube for that matter. Like YouTube is a weaponized algorithm that just
My life got better when I got rid of the YouTube app and I just go look at YouTube through Safari. Completely different experience. The YouTube app, it operates like a social media app. It pushes.
Oh, we do that. Yeah, we actually do that.
The YouTube app totally manipulates you. You have like push notifications. It's awful. So I guess my pledge is no corn syrup, no
alcohol. I noticed that with my kids, yeah.
No social media. What was the fourth one? No porn. I guess that's
it. Yeah, no.
Or how about no streaming apps? Like no Netflix, no Hulu.
How about we just do, we could either do alcohol or corn syrup because those are both food ones. So you kind of just want one food one.
Yeah, but there's no positive. So you can't tell people to do stuff. There's only subtraction, right?
So I would say like maybe no. So you can maybe do no alcohol, no streaming apps, no bad social media, no porn. That's a pretty good set of four.
Mm-hmm.
Or would you rather have no corn syrup instead?
No what?
No hookup apps. Those things are destroying
our
that's a good one.
Yeah.
So Ryan asks, how are you going to manage Seinfeld or NCAA? DirecTV.
You know, rather than no hookup apps, I think you just have to say like no hookups. That seems more straight to the point.
This is not radical. People should save themselves for marriage.
Yeah, for sure. But
so no premarital sex.
Yeah, date to marry only.
That would be trad. That would be a hard one.
I like that.
That's so trad. I say this and people's eyes light up as if I'm telling them to fast.
This is a problem. I love that you just called this out.
40 days.
So if you agree with something that you came to completely independently, but it happens to fit in this bucket of like, you know, TradCon or TradCath or something like, it's like, I read the Bible when I was becoming a Christian in college. And I was like, well, no sex before marriage, obviously. It's not like a big revelation. No, I'm not trying to fit to some bucket. You know what I mean?
If you've made
Reason we have the tradition.
But I'm not trying to fit no bucket, and that's what ticks me off is that all of a sudden you get like labeled.
Also,
and
it's not radical. That's what Andrew's saying. I actually hated.
It's
very normal.
No, I get what Andrew's saying though. I get what you're saying when I quit drinking, everyone's like, oh, so you're going straight edge. And I was like, no, I'm not going straight edge. I just don't want to drink.
I don't know what that is.
You're, like, you're
too young.
Oh, so you're straight edge.
Straight edge is like early 2000s. It was early 2000s. You have all these punk bands and they decide to reinvent being a normal person. And so, I'm straight edge. I don't do drugs. I don't binge drink. I don't do all this other stuff.
By the way.
Okay, so you're like my parents. Congratulations.
Like, oh, so you're straight edge? You're straight edge? I'm like, no, I just don't want to do that stuff anymore. I'm not like identifying as Andrew, I get what you're saying.
Ourselves in the foot because like all of a sudden like I don't know, I'm not trying to be like 100% trad anything. I just want to be what the Bible says to be. I don't know. I just feel like it shoots ourselves in the foot. That's all.
Charlie,
as a move.
Could you do a pledge to not watch college football?
That would be tough.
Ooh.
That would be the toughest. I mean, that would be
because it's supposed to be something hard for
why
you.
Why would you do it? Why would you do it anyways?
Why
college football? There's a lot of reasons college football is bad.
No, I acknowledge it. It's one of my.
Chat loves this.
I don't even try to justify it. I say it's a legit indulgence.
Like, I think that's the healthiest way to do it.
I've got UW the national championship game.
I'm already looking at I'm looking at Oregon's recruiting boards today. I'm a sick person. Okay, I'm looking at who they're recruiting in high school. I'm looking at like what 18-year-olds are going to Eugene. Why is it bad? I will honestly say, when I watch a day of college football, my dopamine is so shot, more so than like a crazy day of AmFest. Am I right, Andrew?
When UW almost gave up the game against Texas.
Can we talk about this? Can we talk about and by the way, I hate UW more than I probably hate Stalin. Okay. And
I can't believe you're a Ducks fan. Like happening that you and I working together for this many years and you're a Ducks fan.
Better yet,
and I'm a Husky.
Andrew was into it, so half of me was like, oh my gosh, the trolling that I would have over this. Would be even with that, I said I actually feel really bad. We have to tell the audience what happened, okay? So what happened is, and I was like, okay, I'm actually going to cheer for UW because I don't want to see Andrew like institutionalized because it was getting to that level, right? It was so bad.
8 seconds of pure terror. Everything that could have gone wrong against the Huskies for 80 seconds happened. I mean, it was like the guy getting injured and
Announcers say, ladies and gentlemen, Washington is going to the national championship. It's over. Out of nowhere, the clock is running down. Texas has no timeouts. A guy just collapses on the field for UW, which because of a glitch in the rules that Blake disagrees with, It effectively stops the clock and gives the winning team a timeout. They don't want a timeout. So it's fourth down, and the clock would have been down to 11 seconds. Instead, it's at 50 seconds, and it stopped. So they punt the ball to Texas. They interfere with the receiver.
15-yard penalty.
Texas fuddles around a little bit. Then they throw a 40-yard bomb, and then they throw another out. They have the ball with 15 seconds left on the 12-yard line. Four downs. And by the way, I'm blowing Chad up.
And this is why.
On the third down, put 1 second back on the clock because apparently the ball went out of bounds.
It was unbelievable. At this point, I said, if Texas wins this game, I don't know if there will be a Charlie Kirk.
But was he vaccinated?
No, I was about to quit everything.
And so this just goes to show Charlie can't.
The chat wants to know.
No matter how gay college football gets, and it's gotten.
It's gotten pretty fake and gay.
They just gave some quarterback like a seventh year of eligibility. Like, it's getting really creepy.
Wait, there's a student athlete headed to his fourth college in seven years. Guerrilla warfare.
Getting top way out of line. The elite U.S. armed forces. I happen to think that the NIL is actually totally elevated the sport because instead of just like Georgia dominating everything and Alabama dominating everything and Ohio State, now you got this transfer portal. And like now you're going to have essentially you're going to have a 12-team playoff and you're going to actually have about eight legitimate contenders. Like this year, Oregon in a playoff would have been pretty like I think it would have been really fun to watch.
You want a thought crime? Oregon played Washington better than Texas did twice. I mean, just like,
yes.
I mean, and that's like
won twice.
Yeah, you know, 100%. So anyway, could I give up college football? That is like it would be it's really, really tough. Like. No TV, no problem. If you said, Charlie, no TV, no NFL, no March Madness, fine. That's one of my few indulgences. Now, is that what the list is supposed to be? Something that really challenges you?
I think it's supposed to be pretty challenging, I think.
How about gambling?
I don't gamble. No fast food ever? That's probably pretty easy for you.
In and out, but like I could give that up. I mean, that's
No fast food.
I don't do fast food.
No video games. That would be tough for a lot of people. I haven't played a video game since
2009.
That's pretty good.
I'm considering playing the new RoboCop game. I am. I hear it's really good. I'll make him out of retirement.
Do you need an Xbox to play video games?
You can play them on your PC.
You can play it on Steam.
Do people still play video games?
Guys, should we tell them?
I've not had anybody talk about video games in my circle for well over since I was in high school. Video games are now bigger than movie franchises.
Is that right? See, I see the advertisements and I think to myself, there's no way people actually.
It's staggering. And then there's like there's political subcultures linked to video
games.
Tell
us in the chat. Let's ask the chat right now.
Like, this is why I get so much done.
Like, if you're
why I'm so productive.
Like, a serious source of like right wing politics is probably like autistic dorks who play Paradox games and they like LARP as founding the Spanish Empire or something.
Does Charlie
and they
not
end
know
up
about
becoming
about Gamergate?
I know about Gamergate. That was Mila.
It's actually about ethics and journalism.
But wasn't that all about they were faking reviews of video games or something?
It's so much deeper than that. You need five PhDs to fully understand
Gamergate.
I'm not
that far off though, right?
Gamergate is probably the single most complex event in human history, displacing the French Revolution.
Yeah, I completely agree with Blake on that. I've had multiple people try to go through the whole list of it with me, and I still can't get there. But I will say though, what we got out of Gamergate was the fact that gamers were the first people to take on journalists and not actually approach them as the way that conservatives and establishment types always did by saying, oh, these are good faith people and we should just talk about their accusations and try to shape the context. No, because gamers don't look at journalists as people. They look at them as enemies in the game. And they start sitting there thinking, how do we defeat the enemies in the game? What can we do? How do we assess their weak points? How do we assess their critical vulnerabilities? How do we use them against themselves? And they basically created the entire playbook that we now use every single day, to the point where you're seeing like Bill Ackerman's wife is using it on Business Insider. Elon Musk uses it all the time. All of those things that you see right now, the name and shame, get out before the hit piece comes out, et cetera, this all goes back to Gamergate. They were the first.
Well, I'm learning a lot. I got so much to do.
Everything in life is gamified, actually. You think about, we're talking about social media before. The way social media is designed is essentially a gamified dopamine rush. So they use it in marketing.
I've always thought about social media as a game.
What's that?
I wonder why there's so many.
I've always looked at social media as a game.
Jeez. No, I'm not even saying you're a bad person. I'm just so stunned that in this amazing world we live in where you could be so productive and
think about all the college football games they could watch.
See, exactly. I used to play video games, and it's just, I don't know. For me, it's not how I'm wired. Okay, so then what is the pledge then?
The original pledge or our pledge? We have like eight different options for.
Where do we come down? Well, the thought crime pledge. Where do we come down on fast food?
I think fast food should be eliminated. You shouldn't have any fast food.
We for it or we against it?
Against. Yeah. So I think no fast food, no alcohol / no corn syrup. No.
I feel like if we're going to make a pledge, it should be, you know, it should be succinct. We don't want this like sprawling 12-point pledge. I would say we should have one food-related pledge item. No alcohol is the strongest of those.
Okay, fine. That's easy.
Although Jack, it does get away.
One. You what, Andrew?
I love the no fructose corn syrup because
super important.
I've seen so many people, no names, people associated with this show, just down like 7-Ups and Diet Pepsi. I know there's no corn syrup in Diet Pepsi. There should be no diet anything. But like nothing. Yes. I'm telling you, real butter is better for you than like all this fake crap. Whole milk is better for you than 2% milk.
That's right.
Anyway.
That's all true. But I will say,
if
diet soda was bad for you, someone would have pulled off the big tobacco lawsuit against it at this point.
Diet Pepsi.
It's different.
My mother had cancer, right? And she was like one Diet Pepsi a day. It was what she had to get down to. And then a year later, her nutritionist told her to knock it all the way off. It's poison.
Aspartame is really bad for you. It just is.
And it's addictive. It's Diet addictive. Pepsi in Diet Coke is so addictive. So anyways, I think all soda should be out the window, but you kind of get it with the high fructose corn syrup. So it's
all right,
be
guys.
Clean.
We are way over time. So check out Noble Gold Investments, Prepare with Thought Crime. This was a great episode. So we have our pledge. I'm holding to it because I already lived through it. And if you add college football, I will break it on Monday, as will Andrew. But I will not defend it. After a day of college football, I'm done. Like, I need to kind of go in the woods to reset. It's just
don't say no golf. You would put no golf on.
That would be like the boomer pledge.
What
like
a waste of time.
A 4-point boomer pledge would be like no golf.
You know what? One of the great lies I was told: you need golf to succeed.
You gotta
in
learn
business.
Golf.
What a crock of crap!
You gotta learn
is.
Golf.
That is the first. No one plays golf anymore.
I love golf.
It is a waste of time. So much business gets done on the golf course. No business gets done on the golf course.
It's a total waste of time.
It's the avoidance of business.
No, if you go for a business golf outing, most of the time the guys are just like drowning in alcohol, and you know it's bonding. It's male bonding, so you feel like comfortable with the guy the next time you actually talk about business.
If you are trying to target someone who is a golfer specifically, then yeah, sure, fine. Otherwise, guys, do any of us golf? Any of us on this?
My brother is a state golf champion.
Look,
Andrew Goff's.
That's worse. Different. That's separate.
Oh, really?
That's athletic. Okay. That's separate. I'm talking about casual, bro-y golf where you could be with your family and you're there for 4 hours and you're schlepping around and you're like, oh, I'm within 100 yards. Count it. Mulligan.
No.
What about?
I'm on the green.
I think there is a famous person we like, though, who is pretty pro golf.
Trump is very pro golf. No, he's invited me golfing. I'm like,
Tucker. Haven't you talked here. About this?
And but he's also Tucker from that generation.
Golf. Tucker does not golf, does he?
He is from no. Tucker doesn't golf.
Tucker cunts.
Tucker. Fly
no, he's
fishes.
Talked about this.
See,
fly
I
fish
is like crazy.
Tucker also is into woodwork.
Fly fishes
and Tucker and my brother.
Tucker
have a long conversation about woodwork.
Amazing essay about fly fishing. He has a whole philosophical thing.
Kind of like
it.
I do with cold.
I love that video of Tucker. Fly
we should have. What if we made the 4-part before?
No, Charlie, it's like you and corn.
Before we go, the 4-part like boomer pledge, like no golf. No bragging about how you have great investment prowess because you bought a house that just appreciated 500%.
No cable
no
TV.
Complaining. No
cable
about
TV.
Your wife.
No disinheriting your kids to like leave the money to some like weird dumb thing or blowing it all in a reverse mortgage.
Reverse mortgages and spending it all in cruises.
No reverse mortgages would be its own pledge.
And no donating to your alma mater.
No cruises.
No donating to your alma mater. That'd be a good one. No like giving affirmative action to hire someone who like doesn't look like your kids because it like helps you feel like you atone for your like racial crimes.
Jack, we keep talking over you. Finish this off tonight.
No, look, I think this is one of our longest episodes ever. I think this is one of our best, certainly in terms of viewers. This is great. I love that we're doing these live. Look, I'll say one thing right now. 2024 is going to be a busy year. We got a lot of work to do this year. We're going to get very busy. I don't know how many live episodes of these we are going to be able to do. We pledged you that we will be able to do as many as we can. We're also on the hook for one episode of this a week. I really love that people have just appreciate the thought crime format and you know what it is. It's a couple of guys just kind of talking about the news, but I mean, you know who we are, you know what our background is, except for Andrew. We're all kind of asking questions about Andrew, but we're going to be here and we're going to be using this show as not just a place to talk about the issues, but also to get into the ins and outs of everything that goes on through this year. We're going to give you the behind the scenes look on everything that happens with the election this year right here on Thought Crime.
I love it. Hit that follow button. We'll see you guys tomorrow. God bless. And until then, keep on committing thought crimes. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Email us as always, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thanks so much for listening. And God bless.
For more on many of these stories and news you can trust, go to charliekirk.com.